This is the NBC Theater. From the NBC Theater in Hollywood, we bring you a radio version of a very rowdy story. A story by a gentleman who is very often called the father of the English novel, Mr. Henry Fielding. This particular story, as we hope you may have guessed, is adapted from Fielding's novel, Jonathan Wild, a very worthy successor to Fielding's equally lusty and perhaps better known novel, Tom Jones. Here now, as dramatized for radio by Richard E. Davis of NBC, the dramatic story of Jonathan Wild.
My proposition that a great, and in this sense, no one has offered greater evidence of true greatness than our hero, that exceptional maker of mischief, the late Mr. Jonathan Wild, the great, who made his first appearance in the great theater that is England the very day the plague first broke out in 1665.
That does not mean you evil.
Ah, the devil take him, ma'am. The child is all mischief.
But what else would you have, good midwife? After all, little Jonathan is a wild. Think you what that means, good nurse? An ancient ancestor was the great Wolfston Wild, who won great honors in the Saxon slaughter of the Britons. Another ancestor was perhaps the greatest pickpocket in all England. And a young woman in the family had a most illustrious career selling oranges in the theaters. Her name was Honor Wild.
Rascal!
Why, good midwife, I do believe you hit little Jonathan.
Aye, and I'll do it again. Take that, you little wretch. Your little Jonathan, ma'am, tried to steal my ring.
A more lovable child ne'er grew up to steal pennies from his drunken father's pockets than little Jonathan Wild. And thus prepared for a life of greatness, Jonathan came to London town, where, clever lad that he was, our hero took lodgings with a gentleman to the Sheriff of London, one Mr. Snap, who lived in a large house with his daughter, Miss Tishy, in addition to whatever debtors happened to be in residence with Mr. Snap while awaiting bail or transference to Newgate Prison.
Oh, Jonathan. Do you have a moment, Jonathan? It's Mr. Snap.
The door is open, Snap. Let yourself in.
Oh, yes, of course.
Good evening, Snap.
Good heavens, Jonathan. A person would think I was your enemy. Put down that knife.
One can't be too careful, Mr. Snap. You never know who's at the door or why.
Well, I knew why I was at your door, even if you didn't. I have a visitor downstairs, the Count Larousse.
The old rake?
The very same. One of the most odious characters in all London. Personally, I despise Larousse. But I was forced to arrest the man and bring him here until his friends produced bail.
What is the charge against the old villain?
Non-payment of debt. He bilked a poor seamstress.
Well, you can't really hold that against a man. But to the point, Snap, what's his coming here to do with me?
Well, Jonathan, I wondered if you'd care to join the Count, my daughter Tishy, and myself in a game of cards. Whisk and swabber.
What an unthinking man you are, Mr. Snap, to ask me to play cards with a man who has no money.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you, Jonathan. But rest assured, I have advanced a small sum to the Count and to Tishy as well. Come, my boy, and join us in a merry foursome of whisk and swabber.
Oh, la, Count Larousse, how you have won at our little game. You seem to have all the luck.
Ah, thank you, my dear Miss Tishy. But would that I might trade some of my luck for some of the winnings.
Whatever does the Count mean by that, Jonathan?
Why don't you question him, ma'am?
I'd be very happy to explain, Miss Tishy. Not that Mr. Wilde couldn't, but it would seem that the more I win, the less I have. If we were not ladies and gentlemen, I would suggest that someone has been at my pockets even as I play.
Watch your tongue, sir, I advise you.
And I advise you, Mr. Wilde, to watch your fingers.
Count LaRousse, please remember the company we're in. What would Mr. Snap say if he heard you make such an accusation?
Why don't we wake him up and find out?
Nay, child, let him sleep. Let us forget what has been said on both sides of the table and close our little game of cards. I have a little business to attend to.
Business? At this hour?
Oh, yes, my dear Tishy. I would like to confer with Mr. Wilde in the privacy of my chamber. I am a great student of character, Mr. Wilde, and because you interest me, perhaps I can interest you. Mr. Wilde, from the moment I first felt your fingers within my pocket, I was quite sure that you possessed the basic qualities for greatness.
That is high praise coming from you, sir.
Then I advise you to accept my advice as you accept my praise. Jonathan, it is a crime for a man of your talents to be wasting his time in small card games, especially when all of London is waiting to be robbed.
I am overwhelmed by your flattery, Count.
We must enlarge your circle. Strike out into the world. I could introduce you to the better people.
My humble thanks, sir, but it strikes me that you won't be striking out anywhere till one of your friends produces your bail.
Well, yes, I must admit to being somewhat short of the ready. Alas, perhaps I've been too hasty with my proposals.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, Count. Ours is a great cause. To its advancement, you have loaned your advice. Therefore, will I lend my money?
Oh, you mean you'll put up my bail?
Hardly that, sir. Why, if our purpose is to build the law, should we begin our adventures by serving the law?
Well, what is it, then, that you propose in order to set me free?
Simply this. When dear Snap is away and you are locked in your room, I will bribe Miss Tishy to unlock the door.
Right, Miss Tishy. Jonathan, you have indeed the makings of a truly great man.
Well, as you might have imagined, Miss Tishy was willing. And Count LaRousse and Jonathan left the Snap household and set themselves to launching Jonathan's career as a truly great man. The Count introduced Jonathan to all the better people in the playhouses and at the gaming tables, including one Mr. Fireblood. And one evening, while the Count was winning most successfully at the hazard table, our hero approached Mr. Fireblood on a most practical matter.
Unless my opinion is wrong, Mr. Fireblood, you're just the man I'm looking for to do the deed.
I'm your man, Mr. Wilde. What's the deed?
I'll tell you soon enough, but first, over here. Do you have pistols?
Yes, I have a pair of pistols.
And you know how to use them?
I was just about to remark, sir.
Good. Now to the point. Take your pistols and place yourself at the head of the small lane that comes directly into this street opposite the park. Then wait for your victim.
Does that mean you want me to shoot, Mr. Wilde?
No, heaven forbid. Just take the victim's wallet and then run for it. Don't shoot. He's a friend.
Ah, isn't friendship wonderful, I always say.
It is not friendship. My reason is that I have use for the man in the morning.
Oh, fancy that. You're a great one, Mr. Wilde. Now, who's the party?
Your victim is our mutual friend, Count LaRousse.
Foul night it was for me, Jonathan.
Oh, my dear, dear Count, beloved friend, you have all my sympathy.
When a man has been hit over the head and robbed, what good can come from your sympathy?
Stop groaning and listen. I have reached a great conclusion.
So have I. Never walk home alone. But let us hear, Jonathan, what is your proposition?
In plain words, this. I have decided to form my own gang.
Splendid, splendid. But can you form one? A gang needs money to begin.
I think I know where I can get the money, if you will help me.
Oh, by all means in my power. What's to be done?
Listen carefully. First, go buy yourself a suit of magnificent clothes. On credit, of course.
Of course, how else?
Quite. Next step, rent a magnificent house.
Without money?
It'll be easier than you think. We'll only rent it for a day, but the landlord need not know this.
But even so, how do I obtain a house even for a day?
Make a great impression with your suit purchased on credit.
Oh, yeah, I understand you, Jonathan. And then what follows?
Then leave the rest to me, dear Count. Mm. You will be the bait in a magnificent fish trap, and I will prepare the fish for the trap. A simple fellow with a heart of gold and a trade to match. Uh-huh. We were school friends, and I have but recently learned that he has become a modest but successful dealer in jewels. His name is Thomas Hartfree.
My dear Jonathan, to think that you would remember me after all these years.
And why not, dear Hartfree? Thomas, old friend, do not all friends come upon each other every day?
True, but to think that of all the jewel merchants in London, that it is I who is the fortunate one to have such an old friend as you, Jonathan. A man who would come to my shop and offer to introduce me to a rich nobleman in search of diamonds.
Well, it only seemed to be the right thing, you know. You see, the Count LaRouche is about to be engaged to an ardent young lady. He is really in need of jewels, you might say.
Oh, it will be an honor to serve the gentleman, Jonathan. What do you suggest I take along with me?
Only your very best diamonds, Hartfree. The Count has exquisite taste. Oh, and be sure to include, surely, one diamond necklace.
Oh, poor weak-minded Hartfree. Truly, he was a fish, even as Jonathan described him. And early that evening, when Jonathan met with the Count, he was delighted to learn that the Count, on pretext, had relieved Hartfree of the full casket of diamonds.
Well, here they are, Jonathan. A fortune in diamonds sitting in this little casket.
My congratulations, dear Count. Oh, yes. And now, if you please, hand them over to me.
Oh, Jonathan, why must you be so impetuous?
Impetuous, my great aunt. It was agreed between us that the jewels be deposited in my hands as original contriver of the scheme.
Well,
and I can't delay here any longer. I have urgent business.
Oh? What business is that?
I fear I forgot to mention it before, but I put two men on Hartfree. Before he reaches his home, he'll be waylaid and robbed.
Huh?
And I must be off.
By Jove, Jonathan, what a stroke of genius. You have the vision of a great man.
Jonathan Wilde did have the vision of a great man. And I might as well tell you at this moment that he had no intention of dividing the jewels with the Count as they had agreed. And so, feeling very much pleased with his success, our hero called upon Miss Tishy Snap. Never was there a man more smitten by a woman. Jonathan had even considered marrying Tishy, for his passion for her was truly honorable. In short, he had so ungovernable a desire for her person that he would go to any lengths to satisfy it.
My dear Miss Tishy, have I told you of my deep affection for you?
Indeed you have, Mr. Wilde. But what mark of affection have you ever given me?
Oh, you vixen! What mark of affection have you ever given me?
You take advantage of me, Mr. Wilde. A girl must think about her honor.
Ah, that is true. And how often I have thought about your honor, Miss Tishy.
It is the most important thing a girl has.
How true. You have convinced me. And I am glad you have spoken so frankly, Miss Tishy, for I was about to sully your honor with a gift.
Oh, Mr. Wilde. We can talk about honor another day. What is the gift?
Oh, nothing really. Just diamonds.
Oh, you beloved man. Diamonds. Where are they?
Here, in this casket.
Then you must open it at once and let me see them.
Well, why not? There. A perfect string of matched diamonds.
Oh, truly, Jonathan. You are descended from heaven.
Oh, my sweet, my loved one. Let me put the brilliance about your neck.
Why don't you just let me hold them up to the light first, so I may see them sparkle?
Of course, my love. Gaze your fill, feast your eyes, and then tell me of your love.
Lout!
Rascal!
What are you saying?
Knave, rogue! Do you think to fool me, to steal my affections in so base a manner, to cheat me of my honor?
But I don't understand.
If you forget that dear father had me employed 3 years with a pawnbroker, you cheat!
Tishy, what is the cause of this torrent of abuse?
Jonathan, your diamonds are made of paste. They are false imitations.
Poor Jonathan. And on the following afternoon, a new test of his greatness awaited him in the agitated person of Mrs. Thomas Hartfree.
Mr. Wilde, you must help my poor husband. They've put him in Newgate Prison for fraud.
Whom did he bilk?
My husband meant to bilk no one. But you see, the jewels which he left with the Count were not paid for. The Count has flown.
So I have heard.
Yes, and if they'd been my husband's own jewels, well, that would have been bad enough. But they were not my husband's jewels. He borrowed them from another dealer. And now that the Count has flown, the other jeweler has ordered my poor Thomas thrown into jail.
This is a desperate situation which we must meet in a great manner. Have the police closed your husband's shop?
Not as yet.
Then we must say what jewels still remain. Some do remain.
Oh, yes, several thousand pounds worth. But how can we save them, Mr. Wilde?
By taking bold and immediate action, madam. In other words, we book passage without delay on the Rotterdam boat and flee to Holland.
And leave the jewels behind?
No, my good woman. We will take the jewels with us.
Oh, but my husband...
We can write from Rotterdam telling your husband of our honest intentions.
Did you say we, Mr. Wilde?
Indeed, yes, my dear Mrs. Hartfree. You don't think I'd let a lady undertake such a perilous voyage alone? I'm going along with you, and I promise to be at your side morning, noon, and night.
Clever, clever, Jonathan. Almost before you could say Machiavelli, Jonathan's interest in jewels had conveyed Mrs. Hartfree and the remainder of the diamonds from her husband's shop onto the boat for Rotterdam. And once out into the channel, come storm or high water, he was determined to make Mrs. Hartfree acquainted with another of his interests.
My dear Mr. Wilde, what a strange look crosses your honest face. Are you troubled by the storm?
Aye, but not the storm that blows without, but rather by the tempest of my passion for you, madam.
Mr. Wilde, think what you are saying.
I have thought a great deal, Mrs. Hartfree, and I hope you will think of it as much. I am overcome by my feelings for you.
Oh, heaven help me. Have you no sensibility, sir?
Enough talk, madam. The storm increases and we may sink at any moment. But tyrant death will not snatch you from me. I mean to make you mine.
Oh, no, Mr. Wilde. Stand back. Stand back. Oh, oh.
Silence, woman.
Don't come near me, Dylan.
What goes on in there?
My curse upon you. It's the captain.
Come in, captain. Come in.
What is taking place, madam?
Oh, captain. This man attempted to force his affections on me.
Never fear, madam. You are safe now, but as for you, Dylan, Juster, once this gale has blown itself out, I'll see that you're put over the side in a small boat, and you can row back to England. You're not fit to travel with gentle people. Have you no more Christianity in you than to besiege a woman in a storm?
Obviously, the captain had a very small mind and was quite blind to all evidence of Jonathan's greatness. For true to his word, the captain put our hero over the side in a small boat. And his indeed was a hard row. While Mrs. Hartfree continued on toward Rotterdam in the larger vessel, for it couldn't turn back just because of her honor, Jonathan, by diligent application to the oars, made his way back to the coast of England. There, after a number of months of prosperity, he decided to take to himself a wife. To further this end, he sought out his henchman, Fireblood, with a proposition in mind, to carry a letter declaring his love to none other than Miss Tishy Snap.
Oh, what a priceless letter Jonathan has written, Mr. Fireblood.
May I assume then, Miss Tishy, that you received my master's proposition with charity?
More like hilarity. After my experience with Jonathan's paste diamond, I'm quite suspicious of Mr. Wilde's offerings.
Oh, but he assured me to assure you that the new diamonds were genuine.
That remains to be seen.
Then you will see him.
I suppose I'd rather see the diamonds. But why all this talk of Jonathan, Mr. Fireblood? When you are here...
Oh, my dear Miss Tishy, do you forget that Wilde is my master?
I'd like to forget it, but you insist on reminding me. Oh, there'll be time enough to concern ourselves about that when I'm married to Mr. Wilde. But right now, Mr. Fireblood, why don't you come over and sit beside me?
And so they were married. Miss Tishy and our hero Jonathan Wilde, that is. Owing, of course, to the splendid efforts of Jonathan's devoted servant, Fireblood. But hardly had the wedding taken place than Jonathan was snatched from the arms of his loved one and chained in the arms of the law. In short, it was Newgate Prison. The offense, hiring others to steal. The punishment, if carried out, death by hanging.
Someone to see you, Wilde.
Jonathan!
Tishy, my own, my love, my true wife. Come. Come sit here and rest yourself. It is only a prison bench, but 'tis the best I can offer.
Oh, prisons. Oh, prison benches. I knew you would come to this end. Death.
Your pessimism is slightly distressing, my sweet. The death law has been with us for centuries, yet all who have been sentenced have not lost their lives.
Talk on, but it matters not. You will hang.
A fine comfort, I must say.
If you had gone out by yourself and robbed for yourself, as I would have had you. You might have robbed on for years. But you were lazy. You hired others. And now see what your laziness has come to. The gallows!
In the name of heaven, madam, have you no pity for me?
I am the only person deserving of pity. Poor I, who should be scandalized by your fault. There goes she whose husband was hanged. Methinks I hear them crying out already.
My dear wife, I beg you, go from this jail at once. You should not have troubled yourself so much on my account.
On your account? It would have been long enough before I came here to see you, Jonathan Wilde.
Why then have you come?
I have been arrested and committed for picking pockets.
Great Jonathan. It would seem that he had reached that point in his great career beyond which Dame Fortune would not suffer him to advance. However, let it be noted that Dame Fortune didn't choose to ignore her former darling and allow him to exit from this world without setting the stage for a final and most dramatic act. That morning on which Jonathan stepped into the hangman's cart for the glorious trip to the gallows tree, he found himself standing beside none other than his old friend, Thomas Hartfree, the jeweler.
Good morning, Mr. Wilde. It would appear that we are to be hanged together.
So it would seem, side by side on the gallows tree.
It almost makes amends to me for being hanged, to have the pleasure of seeing thee hanged too.
Oh, it is true that I helped rob you, but that is not cause to wish a man's death. Why do you say such a thing?
Because it was you who caused my wife to disappear, and now they say that I murdered her, and I must hang for it.
Oh, now, indeed. It is what I might have wished for thee, sir, but I...
Good heavens, Wilde. Do I suffer an hallucination, or is that the voice of my good wife?
My curse upon you both, 'tis she indeed.
I am saved, Wilde. A wife has returned from the grave to save her husband who was about to enter, saying...
Thomas.
My wife, what fortunes have befallen you.
Oh, husband, how many times have I rehearsed my story in the emptiness of my heart, wondering when the day would come when we would be together again.
My dear wife.
Once I found myself out in the world alone and unprotected, the character of men had little recommendation. For in the space of time which has marked my absence, I have sailed 3 seas and had my honor endangered by double that number of men who profess to be my guardians, including three captains, Mr. Jonathan Wilde.
No.
A traveling man who pretended to be my friend, a hermit, and a cannibal king.
Good heavens, wife.
It is a pity she lives to tell her tale.
Be still, villain, and let us hear what took place on this misadventure.
Do not concern yourself for my honor, dear husband. I emerged in every instance victorious and unsullied.
I had every confidence in you, my dear.
Darling, but there's more to tell. One of the men who assaulted my honor offered to tempt me with jewels, which I recognized to be the very jewels which the Count Larousse had cheated from you.
And cheated from me as well.
Be still, wretch. What are these jewels?
I recovered them.
Oh, my dear. Indeed, you are a most amazing woman. Is she not, Mr. Wilde? For myself, I am nearly speechless, my dear.
And well you might be, my husband, for I have yet another diamond, given to me by the cannibal chief who admired me, I am sure, for my English virtues. Our fortune is recovered, my dear husband, and now more than ever, I am persuaded that Providence will sooner or later procure the felicity of the virtuous and innocent.
Silly woman. But the fact remains that her appearance eliminated for all time whatever chance Jonathan might have had for a last-minute reprieve. And so he traveled alone to the gallows tree and true to the end to the great ideal which had guided his life. As he stood on the back of the cart, he applied his hands to the chaplain's pocket and emptied it of the good man's bottle screw as the parson leaped from the cart and our hero swung out of this world. And so we bring our story to a close, reminding you that so long as passions of this world continue as they have been, Jonathan Wilde will stand at the pinnacle of greatness. His lust was inferior only to his ambition, and that characteristic on which he prided himself most was hypocrisy, for he understood so very well the basic proposition of this history, that a great man and a great rogue are synonymous terms.
Jonathan Wilde by Henry Fielding, as adapted for the NBC Theater by Richard E. Davis. Be with us next week at the NBC Theater for a radio version of Voltaire's Candide, and the following week for Jane Austen's Northanger Abbey. These broadcasts of the NBC Theater are sponsored by the National Broadcasting Company as part of a college-supervised course in world literature. If you wish to increase your own knowledge and appreciation of the great novels and novelists, we suggest that you write for full information on these correspondence courses. Write to the NBC Theater in care of one of the following universities or colleges: the University of Louisville, Louisville, Kentucky, Kansas State Teachers College, Pittsburgh, Kansas, the University of Tulsa, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Texas College of Arts and Industries, Kingsville, Texas, and Brooklyn College, Brooklyn, New York. In today's cast, Jonathan Wilde was played by Jay Novello. Tishy was Joan Banks. Henry Fielding was Tudor Owen. Count LaRousse was Lou Merrill. The wife was Norma Varden. Mr. Snap was Colin Campbell. Fireblood was Alec Harford. Thomas Hartfree was Charles Davis. Mrs. Hartfree was Eileen Erskine. Baby was Marion Richmond. Your announcer, Don Stanley. The NBC Theater is produced by Wade Arnold. The director of the NBC Theater is Warren Lewis. This program came to you from Hollywood. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. The Theater Guild on the Air tonight presents a special program in honor of the Community Chests of America. Theater Guild offers an hour-long radio adaptation of the musical hit Brigadoon, starring screen favorite Dennis Morgan and lovely young soprano Patrice Munsell, assisted by Lee Sullivan. It's another outstanding presentation on Theater Guild on the Air. Now stay tuned for the remarkable Quiz Kids on NBC.